Welcome to the Cedar Creek Bible in a Year podcast. Whether you are listening on your own, with a friend, or a group of friends, we hope this podcast helps you connect with Scripture and also enriches your relationship with God. Here are your hosts, Luke Shortridge and Andy Rechtenwald.
Hello, everyone. Cedar Creek Radio is on the air. Luke Shortridge hanging out with Andy Rechtenwald. Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. So excited to be talking about the book of Mark.
Yep.
We're going to look at Mark chapters 9 through 12 today.
Yep.
And I don't know why, but we let Andy
take the trivia over for a little bit. 2 weeks of trivia, or two episodes of trivia so far.
Yeah.
Number one, we talked about how the book of Mark is, what was it again?
The book of Mark is short.
First. Then we talked about how the book of Mark is
wonderful.
Fast.
Oh, yeah. That's
now,
right.
And for the last two episodes, I've taken the liberty of having one trivia topic. And it will be on how the book of Mark is...
poignant.
Short.
Oh, yeah.
Close. Short. So, as the listeners might know, most of them hopefully, but they might not, I'm a short person.
No, you're not.
Yeah, on a good day when I wear boots, I might be 5'5"
Your height is completely adequate.
Adequate. That's the worst descriptor ever.
Yeah, how'd you do?
Adequate. It's pretty good. Okay. So what's going to happen?
I'm 5'8"
Well, the average male height, from what I've researched, is 5'9", so you're actually short.
A half is important.
Do you round up? Is it over a half?
I round up.
Okay.
That's what they tell
me
in school.
So you're average. Okay, fine, you're average. And I'm short. Okay, so I have taken the liberty of having the trivia be about famous, successful short people. Which you shouldn't be any good at, because you're not one of us. I'm not successful,
like a club?
I hope
the
to
short
be a,
successful people?
It is, yeah. Most of these people are alive, though some are dead.
Oh.
Today we're going to cover this particular episode, we're going to cover four, and then the next episode, we're going to cover the next four.
Got
so
it. All right.
I'm going to give you their height, a clue about them, and then you have to guess their name.
No problem.
Pretty basic stuff here, right?
Let's do it.
All right, this one. First person tops in at a 5'3" solid height. Famous director of an icon.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Famous director of iconic Hollywood movies, including Goodfellas and Casino.
Francis Ford Coppola.
No.
Dang it. Let's go with...
After two guesses, I'll give you another hint.
Martin Short.
Very close.
He is short.
Very
not just
close.
A clever name.
You had half of the name right.
Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese. Also the director of the new film Silence, which I haven't seen yet, but I've heard good things about. He tops out at 5'3". I saw a picture of him with two, like,
really?
Maybe like his wife and her friend or just two women. Very short man. Okay.
Okay.
Number two, 5'5".
The Departed
five.
Is fantastic.
It's a fantastic
it
movie.
Is.
5'5",
yep.
Famous author for one of the most well-known books in history.
The Bible.
There are short people in it.
The Bible.
No.
This book is more famous than the Bible.
One of the most well-known books in history.
Read the clue again. I wasn't listening.
Okay. Topping out at a 5'5", this author is famous for one of the most well-known books in history. There are short people in it. They have hairy feet.
Bigfoot?
Nope. Try again. One more. That wouldn't be the author's name either.
Salman Rushdie.
Okay. I'll give you one more clue. For those of you who don't know, that's my ring dropping on the table.
Oh, you just made it painfully obvious.
So tell me.
Tolkien.
Yes, Tolkien was 5'5".
No kidding.
No kidding. Okay, another 5'5", male.
So why do you think he wrote about the rings and power? And
this is not the time for
that. Well, you know.
Overcompensating for weakness in his life.
He obviously made the hobbits the hero. For
they were the hero.
Ah, touche.
Yeah. Hobbits are strong.
Oh, my gosh. It all makes sense now.
Yes.
He's writing about himself.
They were like 3 foot. So
hey, guys, he wasn't talking around.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. 5'5", leading actor in the one, at one point. This
Tom
was
Cruise.
Nope. This was the highest. I didn't pick the obvious ones. This actor was in one of the, it was at one point, still should
Sylvester
be.
Sylvester Stallone.
No. Highest grossing film franchise in the history of Hollywood.
Yes.
And one of my personal favorites.
Mel Gibson.
Nope. Okay, now. Just
one of your favorites. That's not factual.
Film franchise. One of my favorites.
Anecdotal.
It's anecdotal, sure, but it's still a fact.
Bill Paxton.
What franchise was he in? None. Twister was
movies.
The movie everybody knows about with him.
Tornado movies.
Rest in peace. This, I'll give you, okay, that's one guess.
Oh. But Leonardo DiCaprio.
No, franchise, like a conglomerate of movies. Like
McDonald's?
Okay. Another clue, okay?
Give me the number
one film franchise, which doesn't count, is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because they include every single Marvel movie in it, which makes no sense. It's not a franchise. That's dumb.
Yeah.
Okay? And they also include, like, Guardians of the Galaxy. So number two was about potential magic.
Harry Potter?
Yeah. Who's the main actor in Harry Potter?
Oh.
Grossing $7 billion worldwide.
Gosh,
for the
what's his name?
Films.
Got naked in a play. Radcliffe.
That was like Michael Scott, his way of remembering names.
This is how I categorize stuff in my brain. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Getting naked's kind of rad. Daniel Radcliffe.
Did you ever see the picture of him walking 15 dogs?
No.
Very emasculating.
Probably used magic to do it. But yeah, so they got Harry Potter at one point was the number one film franchise in history, but then stupid Marvel took it over because it's not the same thing. It shouldn't count.
Hugh Jackman.
Okay, next one. Probably one of the most intimidating men in Hollywood. Okay.
Oh. Sylvester Stallone.
But
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
No.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
This is short people trivia.
Did you say Bill Schwarzenegger?
His close friends call him Bill. Okay, but coming in at a mere 5'7", this man is known for mobster movies and is a household name.
Forrest Gump.
Oh, no. Danny DeVito.
No. That's a great guess. I didn't put him anywhere. He's not in any of the trivia.
Really?
No. Too obvious.
Short.
This guy is short. He's intimidating. Like, he's actually an intimidating figure in all of his movies, pretty much.
Really?
And I will give
Robert De Niro.
No, he's not short, but okay, that's... Now you get your hint, okay? Say hello to my little friend! That's your hint. Okay.
Al Pacino.
Yeah, Al Pacino. Al Pacino, he comes in at a 5'7".
No kidding.
Very intimidating guy.
No idea.
Very, he killed his own brother in God... I don't know if you saw Godfather Part 3. He killed his own brother.
Oh.
Are you crying right now?
I knew it was you. You broke my heart, Andy.
He's got a tear
I knew it was you.
Eye.
Fredo. You broke my heart.
Oh, so good.
I'm actually crying from laughing. This was awesome. Andy, this was our best trivia ever.
Godfather
Great job.
Is some of the most beautiful movie I've ever seen. Well, you got
Godfather 3.
I don't think you got
any
of them right on your first guess.
No, they crashed and burned.
No. Well, I'm excited.
Bill Schwarzenegger
was definitely the right answer.
That was correct. Missed on the others. Get them next time.
Oh, man, that was good. Well, thank you for participating. I cannot wait until the next round two.
Well, Andy, let's go ahead then and get into our text. We're looking at Mark, and we're going to go ahead and read the scripture from the NLT. If you guys want to follow along, now is a good time to pull out your Bible or switch over to a Bible app. We're going to have some questions as we go along. Feel free to stop the podcast and discuss if you're listening with other people. If you'd like to journal, you can certainly do that, or if you just want to listen and play along in your head, that's acceptable as well. All right, so let's start off with Mark chapter 9, 30 through 37. Andy, you got it?
Yes. Leaving that region, they traveled through Galilee. Jesus didn't want anyone to know he was there, for he wanted to spend more time with his disciples and teach them. He said to them, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of his enemies. He will be killed, but 3 days later he will rise from the dead." They didn't understand what he was saying, however, and they were afraid to ask him what it meant. After they arrived at Capernaum and settled in a house, Jesus asked his disciples, "What were you discussing on the road?" But they didn't answer because they'd been arguing about which one of them was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12 disciples over to him, and said, "Whoever wants to be first must take last place and be the servant of everyone else." Then he put a little child among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, "Anyone who welcomes a little child like this on my behalf welcomes me, and anyone who welcomes me welcomes not only me, but also my Father who sent me."
All right, good stuff. This is a great passage. I love the idea that they're all arguing, and Jesus is like, "What are you guys arguing
right,
about?"
Yeah.
And it's like dead silent.
Like, nothing.
Everything's great, Jesus. Let's just keep on walking. Everything's fine.
Right, because how do you admit that? You go like, we were talking about which one of us is the best. Sounds like a bunch of little kids.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I love this idea of servitude and that for the Christ follower, it's not something optional. It's not something we do if we feel like it. It's not something that, if we have the time in our life, maybe I'll volunteer like This was really important for Jesus.
Right.
And if a servant is not greater than his master, and last time I checked, he's not, then service was important for Jesus. He's our master. Service is important for us.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Andy, here's my question. What does it mean to become a servant of everyone else? How do you currently serve those around you?
Well, I think first we have to separate like serving in a church context or just being a servant.
Because sure.
I think they're two different things. I think one, serving in a church context can spring from being a servant.
Yep.
But it can also be separate. You could be serving for the wrong reasons. I think what Jesus is calling us to here is to have a servant's heart. So that means no matter whom you're interacting with, what you're doing, you have that servant's heart. It could be anything as simple as we used to tell this to high school students. Before your parents get home from work, do the dishes or clean the kitchen as a way to serve them because you are representing.
Maybe give them a heart attack and then you have the house for yourself.
Yeah, right. Especially for those of the students that had unchurched parents.
Oh, gosh.
They know they're going to church, and so you should be a better child because of it. And so I think that even on a small scale, if holding a door open for somebody, having a way of saying, like, I'm going to do things for other people because God has called me to and I love people, I think that's what Jesus is talking about here.
Yeah, when I remember a few months ago, my men's group went through the new gold standard, which is about hotel service, especially Ritz-Carlton and kind of what they do. And one of the things they pride themselves on is anticipating others' needs.
Yeah.
So, for example, if they see a guest that in the morning is going out for a run, which people, you know, will go running, they'll have a cold bottle of water waiting for them on the way back, you know, and they'll try to greet them by name and just look for ways that. That's nothing somebody would ask for, but they look for what needs the people around them have, and they anticipate it and try to find a way to do that. Because when you do, you go above and beyond people's expectations.
Yep,
you
know, it's like not being reactive, but being proactive.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Right, you're being intentional about it. I heard a while back, look for 30-minute opportunities to serve people.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be like, or less, that'd be like the magic window. If it's going to take more than 30 minutes, then okay. If you can't do it, you can't do it, understandable. But if somebody asks you for something like, you know, hey, I'm stranded, can you give me a jump in the parking lot, you know, jump my car, or if somebody forgot something and needs you to go pick it up, if it's going to be 30 minutes or less, what a great investment that is in serving somebody else. And no matter how busy you are, if you can't take out 30 minutes from your day to serve somebody else, then you're probably way too busy.
Right. Agreed.
Cool. All right. Well, let's keep moving along here then. We're going to look at Mark 10:46-52. Then they reached Jericho, and as Jesus and his disciples left town, a large crowd followed him. A blind beggar named Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the road. When Bartimaeus heard that Jesus of Nazareth was nearby, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." "Be quiet," many of the people yelled at him. But he only shouted louder, "Son of David, have mercy on me." When Jesus heard him, he stopped and said, "Tell him to come here." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up." They said, "Come on, he's calling you." Bartimaeus threw aside his coat, jumped off, and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. "My rabbi," the blind man said, "I want to see." And Jesus said to him, "Go, for your faith has healed you." Instantly the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road. So this is an interesting miracle. You know, we see Jesus healing people in several different ways. Here, as far as what we see in the text, Jesus doesn't touch the man, doesn't command him to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He just says, "What do you want?" He makes the guy tell him, and then he says, "I want to see." And he says, "Go, for your faith has healed you," which is funny because then the man doesn't really go.
Right.
He kind of disobeys him and follows him. But I don't know, Andy. What do you think? What sticks out to you here?
You know, what stuck out to me, I don't know why I've never looked this up, but this is like one of the few miracles where the guy's name where the man's name is given. So I just looked it up. It may refer to the man. Oh, this is the Wikipedia, so that doesn't actually help me. Interesting. I have no idea. I don't know what Bartimaeus means. I have no clue, but it's random that it can't be random.
It could be listed because he was an eyewitness. Ha, blind eyewitness.
Potentially.
So, you know.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking, okay.
5-second delay.
Yeah.
It could be the fact that this guy was still alive when Mark wrote this, and he's like, "You want to check my source? Go check to Bartimaeus and see, you know, what happened." I don't know. It is interesting.
It's very interesting.
All right. Well, here's my question for you, Andy. If you could ask Jesus for any miracle, what would you ask him for?
The second coming.
Oh, you
bam,
dog.
Jesus, Jude.
Oh, my
gotcha.
Gosh.
Yep, come back, Jesus. That's my miracle. Great question. I would... That's tough. I would ask... I mean, really, that's the hope of all Christians. So that's I would say that. But maybe if you're asking for a more selfish miracle, perhaps... I would anticipate any sort of illness in my children and ask for him to heal them.
Oh, preemptive.
Yeah.
Like preemptive a healing miracle. In the bank?
Yeah. I would ask for that. Yeah. Store it there and then wait. And then all of a sudden, when it happens, you can heal them.
A miracle to be named later?
Yeah. Yes. That's what I would. What about you?
Yeah, I got to go back to, I would just ask him if I could fly. I mean... I've always wanted to, and I can't wait to get to heaven. I know it's totally selfish, and there's no redeeming value.
I think you've answered this before or something.
Yeah, no, it's a constant theme of my life. It's my miracle. I can get what I want.
Yeah, no,
your miracle was so altruistic and so about other people, and mine was so selfish and non-redeeming.
Well, it could be redeeming, though. Imagine all the good you could do by flying.
Nope.
Speaking of flying, this is real. I do this really short. I heard a thing about Muhammad Ali on a plane.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard this before?
Yeah, go ahead.
And
tell
when
us the story.
The flight attendant comes up because he didn't have his seatbelt on, and she goes, "You need to buckle your seatbelt. We're going to be taking off. Can't take off." And he goes, "Superman don't need no seatbelts." And she looks at him and goes, "Superman don't need no airplanes either." I thought that was really good. I thought about it with flight. Anyways, that was free. Okay. Moving on.
All right, moving along here. Mark 11, 27 through 33. Andy, you got it for us?
Yep. Again, they entered Jerusalem. As Jesus was walking through the temple area, the leading priests, the teachers of religious law, and the elders came up to him. They demanded, "By what authority are you doing all these things? Who gave you the right to do them?" "I'll tell you by what authority I do these things. If you answer me one question," Jesus replied, "did John's authority to baptize come from heaven, or was it merely human? Answer me." They talked it over amongst themselves. "If we say it was from heaven, he will ask why we didn't believe in John. But do we dare say it was merely human?" For they were afraid of what the people would do, because everyone believed that John was a prophet. So they finally replied, "We don't know." And Jesus responded, "Then I won't tell you by what authority I do these things."
Jesus.
Just getting them.
What a character. I've heard this theory that Jesus often takes the third path. So, you know, they ask him a question, mm-hmm. and he could say, you know, "Whose authority do this?" He could say God's or not God's, you know, like path A or
sure.
Maybe I should say path number one or path number two. Well, mm-hmm. Jesus continually looks for and finds the third path,
right.
The option that nobody sees coming, that's right. Totally out of left field. And he says, "You know what, I'll answer, but by what authority did John do his miracles?" And he's got them, because
right.
he really turns the question back on them. And they don't know what to say as well.
It's like, yeah, it's like when somebody says, okay, I mean, I think of this, I don't know why, but if the one of them is not a nickel riddles, like the where you're like, "I have two coins and they total 15 cents, one
okay.
of them is not a nickel," and the person's going, "How do I answer this?" And Jesus would say, "One of them's a nickel, duh, the other one's not." And you're like, "Oh, Jesus."
Oh, Jesus.
Option, technically, that would be option B, but it works what you're saying. I do know that this is the way that Jesus responds to difficult questions is what apologists point to all the time when you're dealing with difficult questions.
Yeah.
A lot of the best ways to answer kind of a question is to ask a question, either a comprehension question or one that's like, okay, if you're going to ask me this, I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah.
It's a great tactic.
The Pharisees go to Peter and say, "Does Jesus pay the temple tax?" And
mm-hmm.
Peter says, "Yes." So what does Jesus do? Go and take the first fish that you find, open its mouth, there's my temple tax. Like, who saw that one coming? The random fish in the water. It's amazing.
Yep.
All right, here's my question. Have you ever had your authority questioned, and how did you respond?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a 2-year-old.
Oh, touche.
All the time. Time out, ground. No, I'm just kidding.
You should never raise your hands in anger to children, because it leaves your groin exposed.
That's like a crappy Chinese fortune cookie.
I don't know where I heard that. It's always stuck with me. Words I try to live by.
I mean, I worked in student ministries for a while, so it happened constantly where it could be parents that were challenging an authority that I had to make decisions or whatever, or students. And I would say, I would like to say that most of the time I responded appropriately or the way that Jesus would, which is like, you know, calmly and asking questions. But sometimes when you get your authority challenged, You have to remember, maybe the person's not challenging you necessarily. Sure. They might be challenging an idea you have or a call that you made. And so it's important, I think. I don't practice this perfectly, to separate yourself from the criticism or the challenge.
Yeah, right on. Dan Ryland does a pastor's blog, mm-hmm. and he has a blog out about how to deal with difficult people. Mm-hmm. And he said when people challenge you, more often than not, there's something happening beneath the surface. Mm-hmm. So he likes to ask the question, what's really bothering you? You know, he'll just like throw it at people randomly. What's really bothering you? And often it's not the issue being discussed. It's something else, either their personal life or past history with you or whatever else. You know, get to the root of the issue so that you can really do some healing and really figure out what's going on. I agree. I think if you're in ministry, you're going to have your authority challenged at times. I'd like to say I've always responded well. The truth is I haven't. Eric shaking his head. So, you know, we all got work to do on this
all
one.
All the time.
Let's just move on all then. All right, our last passage we're going to check out today is Mark 12, 41 through 44. Jesus sat down near the collection box in the temple and watched as the crowds dropped in their money. Many rich people put in large amounts. Then a poor widow came and dropped in two small coins. Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has given more than all the others who are making contributions. For they gave a tiny part of their surplus, but she, poor as she is, has given everything that she had to live on. Aha! Mm. The widow's mite. This is one of the tellings of the widow's mite. Andy, what do you think? What stands out to you in this story?
I heard this. I did not grow up in church, but I did go to Sunday school. Or not Sunday school. It was like a Bible camp. What do they call that? Vacation Bible school.
It's called
What?
I was going to say a cult.
No.
If they're talking about Jesus and it's not a church.
I went to Vacation Bible School once.
I'll think the best. We'll say it was a parachurch.
Yeah, well, I was young, but I do remember hearing about the story, although they talk about pennies instead of small coins, you know. And I always was like, well, it's two pennies. It's like you could find those on the street. You could go pick those up.
Sure.
You know, I find it on my couch. But really, when you think about it, I look at it in my own life. When giving is easy for me, it means I'm probably not doing it right.
Yep, that's right.
It doesn't mean that I should be putting my family into debt because I'm giving too much or whatever. It means that giving should be a lot. When I give, it should be like, oh gosh, okay, this is a good amount of money that I'm giving over to turn over to the church, to turn over to somebody else, you know. And so I think that's kind of the big deal. She gave everything she had. Those guys were like, yeah, whatever, toss my money in here, and I hope everybody notices, kind of deal.
Yeah, I'm going through with my men's group the book How to Be Rich by Andy Stanley. Mm-hmm. And it's not how to get rich, but it's how to be rich, what to do once you're rich, and give some pretty staggering statistics. If you make $35,000 a year or more, you're in the top 3% of wage earners in the world.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So his argument is that even the poor of America are super rich compared to the rest of the world. But he talks about this idea of generosity and how it really combats all of the adverse side effects of being rich, of being wealthy. And one of the things with generosity is that it's got to be progressive over time. You know, what was generous for you 10 years ago is not generous today. And if it doesn't affect your livelihood in some way, you know, it doesn't affect the way you eat, the way you dress, the way you take vacations, then you're not truly being generous,
right?
Because it should cost you something. And I think what we see here with the widow is that her giving cost her a lot more than it cost the other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't about the amount, it was about the sacrifice.
Yep.
And, you know, we can consciously know that, but, if you look at our schedules and you look at our online bank statements, it really does reveal a lot about the heart.
Yep.
And I know it's convicting to think about, but it's the truth.
I agree.
Cool. I heard a cool story Tim Keller was telling me, and he was talking about if your son loves baseball, so you hate baseball, but your son absolutely loves it, and you decide that you're going to do the great parent thing, and you're going to buy him tickets to the Yankees game, and he's in New York, so he said, okay. You know, you decide, all right, you know, we're gonna go to the park, we got to pay for parking, now we got to get food. And he said, you're counting up all that this is going to cost you. You don't even want to be there. You're just doing it for your son. Like, that hurts, you know, how much you have to give away. But he said, now imagine you love baseball, and your son is into it as well. And now you want to get the best seats, and you want to get there early. And you want to, you know, bring on the hot dogs. Who cares, you know? Bring on nachos as well. Like, the cost is more, but you're excited. because your heart is connected and your heart is in it.
Yeah.
And he said, with giving to God, it can't be out of this dutiful obligation. You know, you should give until it hurts, not because you're feeling stingy and, oh, I got to give this to God, but give until it affects other areas of your life because you're so excited about this thing in front of you that you just can't wait to be generous.
That's great.
Tim Keller for the win. Money in the bank. All right. Andy, any final thoughts or conclusions when it comes to this section of Mark? What a great book.
I think for anybody that's listening, and for me included, even just talking right now, I think it's good to let God challenge your heart on any topic, including things that are sensitive, like giving, the way that we spend our time through serving, like we talked about earlier. And so maybe spend some time praying and asking God to convict you and kind of push you in a way that would increase your faith in him.
Love it. Thank you, sir. All right. Well, how do people get a hold of us?
They can go to Facebook and add us there. They can follow us on Twitter. You're on the Twitter, right?
I am on the Twitter.
Yeah, so follow us on Twitter. I don't know your Twitter handle. It's just Luke Shortridge.
Very complicated.
Okay, never mind. Mine's Andy Rechtenwald.
Yeah, at Luke Shortridge.
Oh, okay.
No spaces, no hyphens.
Perfect. And then you can also email us if you have a comment or question at podcast@cedarcreek.tv. We would also really appreciate it if you write a review in the iTunes store. I know that there's other phone platforms out there for Android. I don't know what they listen on. I have no clue. But if you do and there's a way to rate, we'd love a good rating. If it's a bad rating, just email it to us. You don't need to put it in public.
Yeah.
And then share the podcast with your friends because we'd love for other people to hear this.
Perfect.
Perfect.
All right. Next up, we're going to finish off the Book of Mark.
Let's go.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Bye.
See ya.